We are. Okay. David, you there?
Hello, Rabbi. Yes.
Okay. And Dan is there too, although I don't see the camera. Oh, there you go. Now I can see you. Excellent. Much easier when you see people. I don't know why, but it seems much easier when you're talking to a face instead of a computer screen. So, Robbie, good evening to you. All right, you are on mute. Okay, there you go. Okay. As long as the mics will hold off feedback, you're welcome to keep the mics open. Otherwise, we'll just mute and chime in when you want to or need to. I am going to share the screen as I usually do, so you have the text in front of you on the computer. And you're welcome to keep the cameras on or off, however you are comfortable. And we are ready to go. So we are starting a new story. Appropriately enough for Yom Yerushalayim coming up on Friday, we are dealing with the story of the conquest of Yerushalayim in the beginning of the conquest of Yerushalayim. And there's a lot to be said in this little episode. It's a couple of psukim long, but it'll take us several weeks because the context of the story of the conquest of Yerushalayim is an extraordinarily central piece to Sefer Shmuel. So if you remember in our last installment, just make sure we're recording, yes. In our last installment, the Am Yisrael had come to, all the tribes had come to David in Hebron, where after the death of Ishbosheth ben Shaul and the end of the revolt and the end of the kind of the separation of the kingdom into two, they come to David and they say, it's time for us to unite, one banner, one kingdom, one Malchus. They make a breach with David, and it's time to become, finally, one people again. And that is, that's where we left off, two psukim, Dalet and Hey, that are a kind of a summary of the world of David. Ben Shloshim Shana David B'Malchor, Be'im Shana Malach, he reigned for a total of 40 years, starting at the age of 30. From the time he assumes the throne in Hebron, b'Hebron Malach al Yehuda sheva shanim, b'shisha chodeshim in Hebron a total of 7.5 years, u'Yerushalayim Malach 33 shana al kol Yisrael b'Yehuda in Yerushalayim a total of 33 years over Israel and Judah together, and that's where the sort of this pivotal moment that brought all the tribes together, one nation, if you will, right, under God, one people, no longer Yehuda, Israel, two tribes, two peoples, Binyamin in the north, Yehuda in the south, the civil war that had been raging for 7 years is finally over, and we are looking towards a new era under one king. And one of the immediate things that David does is recognizes that he can't stay in Hebron. Where he goes is a big question. But he certainly can't stay in Hebron. Why can't he stay in Hebron? Now, why does he have to move altogether? Why can't he stay in Hebron? It's a fairly straightforward question. I'll throw that one open. Why can't he stay in Hebron? That is a, feel free to chime in and get a little bit of feedback, right? Why can't he stay in Hebron?
Does he already know that he's supposed to go and build this house of, you know?
No, I don't think he knows anything. I just a basic, simple question. Why does he know he can't stay in Hebron? This is not theology, philosophy, history. This is a basic, simple calculation. Why can't he stay in Hebron?
Is Hebron not central?
No, Hebron is, where is Hebron? Here is a map of Israel. Here is Hebron. This is a bad map because you don't see the tribal divisions. But let's see if I can pull up the map with the tribal divisions. You'll see it right away. Oops. Let's do that again. That's upside down. Okay. If you remember this map, does this map look familiar to you? This map should look familiar to you. This is the map of the tribes of Israel. Here's Judah in the south. Here is Binyamin in the north. Why can't he stay in Hebron? Hebron is the capital of the tribe of Judah. Whatever you say about David, the moment this Brit is made, and this Brit is between all the tribes of the north led by Binyamin and Judah in the south, one thing's clear. You can't become the king of all of Israel and remain in what has been identified for the last 7 years as the capital of the tribe of Judah. That would be politically the worst move that David could make. Wants to demonstrate that he is no longer just the king of Judah, but now the king of all Israel. Clearly, he has to get out of Hebron. Where he goes is a big question mark. I'm going to leave it for now, but that's clearly part of the issue. Okay? So I need to do something because that was a mistake that I just made. I need to get back to this map. Fine. Let's pull that other map up in here. All right, that map we're going to keep open over here. So let's go back to our story in Perek Hey. Vayelech, the first thing David does, Vayelech HaMelech V'Anashav Yerushalayim. The first thing David does, he takes his people together with the king. He and his people go to Yerushalayim. El HaYivusi Yoshev HaAretz, to the Jebusites, inhabitants of the land. Vayomer David Lemor, the Jebusites say to David the following, Lo tavohena, you shall not come here. It sort of reminds me of that line in Lord of the Rings. You shall not pass. Lo tavohena, ki im hesircha ha'ivrim me'apischim, lemor lo yavod David hena. Unless you remove the ivrim and the pischim, which translates literally as the blind and the lame. What that refers to is an extraordinary story and complex piece. We'll leave it for now. We will, in one of our weeks coming up, discuss this phrase. What do the Jebusites mean when they say to David, you shall not come here unless you remove the blind and the lame? Saying, another way of saying or thinking, lo yavod David, David will not come here. Vayilkod David et mitzudat Tzion hi ir David. Nonetheless, David conquers the stronghold of Tzion and what eventually becomes the city of David. Vayomer David vayomahu. David said on that day, kol makeh. One second, I want to get rid of this. Vayomer David vayomahu. Kol makeh yivusi. Anyone who smites the Jebusites and engages, touches, gets to the tzinor, which is typically translated as a pipe or a gutter or some kind of object, we'll see that's also a conversation. But David said on that day, anyone who smites the Jebusites and touches or gets to the tzinor, ve'et ha'pischim ve'et ha'ivrim snoi nefesh David, and smites, makeh, that phrase continues, the pischim and the ivrim, these blind and lame, whatever they refer to, al ken yomru iver v'pisech lo yavo al habayit, therefore it is said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. Vayeshev David b'mtsuda v'yikra la ir David. David then dwelt in the stronghold in this, and called it the city of David. Even David Saviv mina Milo Vavaita, he built around from the area of the Milo, which is some sort of a moat or a filled in area, outward. David waxed great, and God was with him. Those five psukim are the story of the conquest of Yerushalayim. 3,000 years of history. And everything we know about Yerushalayim centers on these five psukim. So there is a lot to be said about these five psukim. I don't know if any of you have ever gone through the archaeological digs of the old city, or the tunnels, the tunnel tours, or the excavations in Ir David. Today, you can't go anywhere near that area of Yerushalayim without a detailed conversation with the tour guide about these psukim. So might as well learn them by heart for your next trip to Israel, because they're going to come up. Just pure grammar, this sentence in Pasuk Chet is half a phrase that's missing its conclusion. Just read it again. Vayomer David b'yom ahu kol makeh yivusi v'yiga betzinor betapiskim et ha'evim snuei nefesh David. David said, anyone who smites the Jebusites and gets to the gutter and takes away the lame and the blind, anyone who does that, parenthetical, therefore it was said, the Iver v'Pisach shall not come into the house, and David sat in the Mitzvah for years to come. In other words, there's a half a phrase that's missing here. If you look at this phrase right here, this is what we call a conditional statement that's missing its conclusion. He who smites the Jebusites and touches the Tzinor, what? What will happen? Right? Ko makei yibusi. That sentence is not finished. There's a piece of the story that's missing. There's clearly a half a pasuk that's missing. So that's just a kind of a parenthetical aside, that there seems to be a part of this phrase that's missing. And the answer is there really is a part of this phrase that's missing. Where it is found is in Divrei Hayamim. This same passage appears in Divrei Hayamim. I'll show you the exact parallel passage. It's in Divrei Hayamim Perek Yud Aleph, and there it says the following. After they come to him in Hebron for the Brit, starting with Pasuk Dalet. So now I'm reading from Divrei Hayamim, same psukim. Vayelech David b'chol Yisrael Yerushalayim hi Yivus. David and all of Israel came to Yerushalayim. That is the city or the stronghold of the Jebusites, so called Yivus. The name of the city is Yivus. V'sham ha-Yivusi yoshvei ha-aretz. There, in Yavuz, dwelt the Jebusites, inhabitants of the land. V'yomru yoshvei Yavuz u'David. The Jebusites who dwelt there said to David, lo tavohena, you shall not come here. All the references to the blind and the lame don't appear in Divrei Hayamim. That whole subsection of the story is missing. V'yilkod David et mitzudat tzion hi'ir David. Nonetheless, David was able to conquer the stronghold of Zion, the city of David. Vayomer David, this is that phrase that we said was missing a key piece, said David, kol makeh yivusi barishona, he whoever smites the Jebusites first, yeh l'rosh l'sar, he will, so in so doing, earn the position of chief of staff. David kind of put the head of the army as a kind of a competition. Whoever manages to get into Ir David, I will give him the position, the open position of chief of staff, head of the army. Why is it open? Because remember, a couple of weeks back, we talked about the fact that in the aftermath of Yoav's assassination of Avner, it's quite possible that David was uncomfortable with Yoav being his chief of staff. And so he kind of temporarily deposed him, and he put the position up for grabs. Whoever manages to take Yerushalayim, reach the Jebusites first, I will make him the Rosh and Sar, the head of the army. No, to David's surprise, no surprise at all, Vayal Barishana, Yoav ben Tzruya, first one to reach Yerushalayim and win the competition was, of course, our old friend Yoav ben Tzruya, Vayin Lerosh, David made him the captain. So here, Yoav returns to his position as the head of the army. I suspect that the reason why that part of the phrase is not in Malachim is not in Shmuel, it's because David was not so happy with Yoav ben Tzruya. We know that from various places. He had no choice, but that kind of end of that reference is missing in Sefer Shmuel. Nonetheless, Vayesha David Bamitzad, Alken Karulo Ir David. The rest of the story is as it is by us. Okay, questions so far? I'm going to close.
My question is just that the statement is said by David that it's okay to smite the Jebusites, but don't harm any of the people that are blind or...
No. I have no idea what the... we do not yet know anything about the blind and the PSF, what they refer to, who they are, what they are. It's not clear that they're people. Could be that they're idols. It's not clear at all to what she's referring. I'm going to leave that for a shiur unto itself. We have several shiurim we're going to get to in the in these stories. This is going to take us a few weeks, but I want to leave that piece of the story aside. For now, just take it at face value that David's choice of city to go and conquer is what we refer to as Yerushalayim, although at the time it wasn't called Yerushalayim. At the time, it was called by a different name, namely?
Yevus.
Correct.
I have a question. So he was going to make this guy Yoav his head general, or was he going to make him like, he didn't say king, but he...
No, general, chief of the army, head of the army.
Okay.
Which is the position... Right.
Like mayor of Jerusalem, or no?
No. Well, there's some discussion whether Rosh means mayor, political head, and Tsar is the... or the other way around, that Rosh is the military position and Tsar is a political position. But the simplest reading of it is that it is it was a competition for who would lead the army. And Yoav stepped back into that role in the aftermath.
So did David not conquer himself?
No, David is the so we'll see what this means. I'm gonna leave for now. Exactly how Yerushalayim was conquered, what role David played, what role this person who was in the end Yoav Tzun Tzvi, what role he played. The tactics here is also a subject for discussion. I'm going to leave it aside. There's a few pieces of the story we're going to get to eventually. The tactics, the Yevevri Piseach, all of those pieces, I'm going to put them aside for now because we have to do this one step at a time. So, but I will come back to it. So if you stay with us, I will eventually come back to that question of exactly how they conquered Yerushalayim. What I wanted to explore for the remaining time we have this evening is why was it necessary to conquer Yerushalayim? I want to take a big step back and ask the big question. How is it possible that we are now more or less 400 years into the Israelite sojourn in the land of Israel, and Yerushalayim, with all of its significance and all of its history and all of its spirituality and all of its religiosity and all of its Sefer Bereshit world story, the place of the Akedah, the place of the dream of Yaakov, the Masoret about the foundation stone, everything we know about Yerushalayim from the Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem, everything. And yet they're 400 years in the land of Israel, and Yerushalayim has remained a Jebusite stronghold in the heartland of Israel. That is an extraordinary story. Right, come back to this map. Right, here's Yerushalayim, literally smack center of the country. Smack center of the country, and it's a Jebusite stronghold. This is all Israelite. Everything around here. Yerushalayim is the holiest city for the Jewish people, all the way back to the story of Sefer Bereshit, and it's a Jebusite stronghold until this moment. That is extraordinary. Now, you could argue, and I can make the claim, that Yerushalayim is a Jebusite stronghold because it was too difficult to conquer. And every time they tried to conquer it, they failed. And so it remained one of those cities that unfortunately we were unable to take. You could make that claim. The problem is, it would be false. Because we know not only is Yerushalayim a Jebusite stronghold, but they conquer Yerushalayim at least twice, maybe more. And they conquer it, and they abandon it, and they move on. And so what I want to explore this evening is just the question, no answers. We'll have to wait till the following class, which will be in 2 weeks, to begin to explore the answers. But I want to explore the question, what evidence do we have for the fact that they get to Yerushalayim several times and they ignore it. And what is the implication that that has for our understanding of Yerushalayim? So I'm going to take you on a little bit of a history journey through the story of Yerushalayim. We're going to work our way backwards. Right, so instead of looking at Yerushalayim and Chumash and the significance of it in Sefer Bereishit, I want to just take a look, working our way backwards to Tanakh, what happens to Yerushalayim as the Jews enter into the land of Israel from the days of Yoshua, the days of Shoftim? What is the status of Yerushalayim given all the history we know about? The foundation stone, the Brit that God makes with Abraham, the place of the Akedah, Eretz Moriah, Yaakov's tefillah and the ladder, Ein Zekim Bet Elokim V'zeh Shar HaShemayim.
Was this the ladder at Bethel, or was it at
Yerushalayim? So there's a medrash that connects Bethel and Yerushalayim. We'll talk about that, but it's certainly perceived to be or understood to be connected somehow to Yerushalayim. Right? Emtzah Shippur connected Yerushalayim. It's somehow pointing to Yerushalayim. Well, again, all of those midrashim will eventually come back to. But certainly, the place of the Akedah, no question. So there's a lot to explore. There's a lot of mystery around Yerushalayim. And I want to actually start from Sefer Yoshua. So I'm going to take us back to this perek here, which is Yoshua Perek Yud. Yoshua Perek Yud, it's the first time we encounter the conquest of Yerushalayim by name. So to understand this perek, you need to remember the story of the Givonim? We talked about that over the last few weeks. Right? The Givonim were that group of Canaanites that lived in the city of Givon and a couple of cities in the area, had made a pact with Yoshua. Yeshua thought they were from far away. He made a breach with them, an alliance. Eventually, Shaul was held accountable for killing the Givonim that ultimately led to Rechav and Baanah killing Ishbosheth. We talked about that over the last few weeks. That brit with the Givonim is in Perek Tet of Yoshua. Okay, that's the perek we just did the last couple of weeks, the story of the Givonim. Immediately following it, in Perek Yud, we find the following story. Vayi kishmo Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim. The king of Yerushalayim, by the name of Adoni Tzedek, heard that Yeshua had conquered the city of Ai and the city of Yericho, and that he had made peace with the Givonim. Vayir'u ma'od, and he was afraid. Ki ir gdola Givon, ki echat ha'ir ha'mamlecha. This Givon was not a small village. This Givon was a major center. It was bigger than I, and it was more, and it was stronger than I. He was very afraid. If you look, I'm going to show you a quick map of the area, and you'll see here is Gilgal, which is where the camp of the Israelites was, where Yeshua had base camp. Here is Yerushalayim, and here is Givon. So if Yeshua has just made conquered I, and just made a pact with Givon, you can see the direction that this is taking. Right? Gilgal is where Israel is. Ai, they just conquered. Givon made peace with them. And before you know it, Givon and all of these cities, which are the cities of the Givonim, and suddenly what happens? Strategically, what has Yoshua done? And he's cut a swath across the center of the country. And conquered territory, or allied himself with territory, with peace. And suddenly, the country as a whole is going to find itself divided. And Yeshua is going to succeed in one of his biggest strategic challenges, which is to prevent the alliance of the city-states of the Canaanites. Yeshua has a very large army at his command. But each of these cities by itself is a walled city, which is a hard city to conquer, and B, they're small in them of themselves. Yeshua is racing against the clock. He needs to prevent these cities from aligning together in an alliance that would threaten him by numbers, and he needs to figure out a way to get these armies out of their walls. So he makes this peace pact with the Givonim. The reaction to it is swift by the king of Yerushalayim. So I come back to this perek. Vayishlach Adoni Tzedek, Melech Yerushalayim. Adoni Tzedek, King of Yerushalayim, sends words to Haham Melech Chevron, and Pir'o Melech Yarmut, Vel Yefia Melech Lachish, Vel Dvia Melech Eglon. So he sends word to four other cities, and he says to them, Alu alai bizruni, come help me. Vinaket Givon, we're going to destroy Givon for having made peace with Israel. V'yasu v'yalu chameshet malchei emori, so these five Amorite kings gather together, king of Yerushalayim, king of Hebron, king of Yarmut, king of Lachish, king of Eglon. They in their camp, and they go to war against the Givonim. The Givonim send word to Yoshua and said, Hoshia lanu ve'ozrenu, come save us, because we made a pact, we made a deal. It's time for you to live up to your half of the bargain. Yoshua went up from Gilgal together with his people. They do it all night. They do a tactic where they travel by night and surprise the enemies of these five. They surprise the armies of these five kings. God assures them that he'll be successful. Yomar Hashem al Yeshua al tiram mehem ki biyadcha netatim. Vayavo aleihem Yeshua pitom. And Yeshua, they were not expecting Yeshua's response. Yeshua attacks them in the middle of the night, or by Kol HaLaila, Alamin al-Gilgal. He surprises them in the morning because he rose up, he came from the Gilgal in an all-night move. They were very successful. There was a great battle in Givon, and the army of the five kings was destroyed. Vayirdefem derech male bet choron vayakem ad azeka ve'ad makeda. He chases them to Beit Choron, and from Beit Choron down to Azeka and Makeda. There's a lot of names of a lot of places in this city, in this story. I'm going to take a quick glance at that map again. Going to just give us a perspective of what's going on. I'll just kind of draw it out for you. Here is Gilgal in an all-night climb. He takes the army and he moves up to Gilgal, up to Givon, in order to protect Givon, which had been surrounded by the five cities of Yerushalayim, Hebron, Yarmut, Lachish, and Eglon. So if you can see these five cities, Hebron, Lachish, Eglon, Yarmut, and Yerushalayim, they are all coming together to Givon. You see what happened? It's this alliance here, Yerushalayim, Hebron, Eglon, Lachish, right? They all came and they attacked Givon. Yoshua, on the other hand, comes to protect Givon, and there is a battle. Yoshua then conquers the armies and chases them to Beit Horon. Now, if he chases them to Beit Horon, he's chasing them northwest. And from there to Azeka and Makeda. So he chases them out of the hills into the plains in an area known as Emek Ayalon. Emek Ayalon is famous for today. It's where Shalavim is. And that is where, at the end of this battle, Yoshua offers a prayer or a song of the sun standing still in Ayalon. Shemesh b'Givon Dom b'Hayareach b'Emek Ayalon, to kind of hold the battle at place in order to allow him to finish the job and run the enemies down south. So, if everybody with me? So the city of Yerushalayim, together with Hebron, Eglon, Lachish, Yarmut, and they all came attacked Givon. And in the end, Yeshua comes, attacks the five army of the five kings, chases them east, west first, and then south. Okay. Back to the story. I'm going to skip a couple of pieces. And at the end of the battle, you get down to Yeshua says to the people, Atem al tamodu, do not stop. Ridfu achrei oivechem, chase after your enemies. Vizinav temotam, destroy them. Al titnu mavol arehem, do not let them return to their cities. Why is Yeshua so concerned that they not return to their cities? Yeshua says to them, quickly, don't let the sun set. Chase them now. Do not let them
hide and behind the walls.
Correct. He doesn't want, he's got them where he wants them. He's got all of these armies in open fields. He's got them literally in open territory. He has the upper hand. Allow them back into the cities of the protection of the walls, and you're going to lose that upper hand. So Yeshua chases them, and he does exactly that, and he destroys them. And then we have a list of all of the cities that Yeshua conquered on that day. I'm going to skip for a little bit. Starting here in Pasuk Kavchet. Bet Makeda lachad Yeshua bayamahu. On that day, Yeshua conquered the city of Makeda and destroyed it. Next, ve'avo Yeshua b'chol Yisrael limom Makeda livna. From Makeda, they come to the city of Livna. If you can kind of see where he is over here, here is Makeda. It's unclear whether how far south it is. Here is Devir. Come to some of the other cities, Eglon, Livna. Comes to Livna, Vayilachem, fights against Livna, destroys it, conquers it, moves on. Vayavo Yeshua b'chol Yisrael limom Livna Lachish. From Livna, he comes to Lachish. There is Livna, there is Lachish. One city after another. Eglon, Makeda, Livna, Lachish, Eglon, Hebron. One after another. And God gives him Lachish into their hands. They conquer Lachish. Azlara Melach Gezer. So they take care of Gezer too. And from Gezer, they move to Eglon. And from Eglon, they come to Lachish. Vayal, Yoshua, Bechoy, Solimom, Eglon, Hebrona. From Eglon, they get to Hebron. They conquer Hebron. They destroy it. Yashav Yisrael b'chol Yisrael limo Devir. From Hebron they go to Devir. Just remember, here's Hebron, here's Devir. They're stuck in this area here. Makeda, Eglon, Lachish, Livna, Hebron, Devir. All of these cities down here in the south. Vayil kedat malkavet kol area. They destroy Devir. Vayakeh Yeshua kol aretz. Conquered, smote the entire land. End of the story. Yeshua had conquered from Kadesh Barnea to Aza, and that is the end of the story. So in all of this conquest, one city is omitted. Gets to Hebron, gets to Devir, gets to Eglon, gets to Makeda, Lachish, Livna, Keda, Yarmut. One city is missing.
Yerushalayim.
He never gets back to Yerushalayim. Now, you could say, and I would buy it, that he doesn't get back to Yerushalayim because by the time the end of the day came and he had finished sweeping through the southern region of Har Hebron, the armies of Yerushalayim had returned to their city and closed in themselves within the gates, and it's a long journey back to Yerushalayim. And so by the time he finished cleaning up down here in the south, he was unable to get to Yerushalayim. It's not the first time nor the last time it's happened that in the efforts to kind of finish up the campaign, they missed getting to Yerushalayim. Maybe. But I have a very hard time with that. Why? When it comes to, this is the punchline of this discussion. If, and this is a big if David knew, sorry, Yeshua, we're in Yeshua, sorry. If Yeshua knew the significance of Yerushalayim, the historical significance of Yerushalayim, the religious significance of Yerushalayim, if Yeshua had understood what Yerushalayim meant historically from the days of Sefer Bereishit, the place of the Akedah, the place that was destined to be the place of the Beit HaMikdash, if that was the case, would he have spent all that time fighting the cities in the south and abandoning the opportunity to conquer Yerushalayim? He had the king and the army of Yerushalayim outside of the walls the same way he had all of the kings of these cities down outside of the walls. He had a choice. He was here in Emek Ayalon. The choice of coming back to Yerushalayim or heading all the way south into the area of Hebron and Debir. If Yehoshua had understood what Yerushalayim meant, would he have abandoned it for this southern ridge?
Well, don't you think that Hashem talked to him? So
I'm sure that Hashem talked to him, and it comes to the same question, but from the other angle, right? Why isn't he told? That's a fair question. Comes to the answer will remain the same answer, but I'm looking at it right now from a political perspective, or sort of geopolitical perspective.
If I might also say that Adoni Tzedek, I mean, maybe not that exact one, had been kind of like an ally at one time, right?
No, Adoni Tzedek not, Malki Tzedek. You're talking about Malki Tzedek in Sefer Breishit. Malki Tzedek is a different king to Adoni Tzedek. That also we will discuss as to what the relationship between them is. Malki Tzedek is the king of a city called Shalem. Is that in fact Yerushalayim, or is it a different city? But it is true that Malki Tzedek and Adoni Tzedek are both have the name Tzedek in their reign. And that we'll come back to. That is correct. But you see already the beginning of a pattern of the problem. Now, it gets even more interesting and more complex. So I'll show you, for example, Pasuk in Perek Yud Bet. Let's just take Yehoshua and just move forward to Prakim. This is a list of all of the kings that Yehoshua conquers. And amongst the names of the kings that he conquers is Yerushalayim, because in this battle, he had fought and won the battle against the king of Yerushalayim and Hebron and Yarmut and Lachish and Eglon and Gezer, etc. So he is listed here. On the other hand, if I go to the end of the Sefer, amongst the psukim that describe the end of the story of what was conquered and what wasn't, in Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Samach Gimel, it says, the end of Perek Tedvav, Ve'et ha-yevusi yoshvei Yerushalayim lo yachlu b'nei Yehuda lo rishon. The Jebusites, inhabitants of Yerushalayim, the children of Judah were not able to drive out, and the Jebusites therefore remained in a Jebusite stronghold in the heart of B'nai Yehuda in Yerushalayim until today, at the time of the authorship of Sefer Yehoshua. So by the time Sefer Yehoshua closes, it's clear that Yerushalayim had been conquered, number one, or the king of Yerushalayim had been conquered, had been defeated in battle. But Yehoshua decided and made a tactical decision to head south and attack the southern ridge cities of Hebron, Debir, Eglon, etc., and abandon Yerushalayim. Or at least risk abandoning Yerushalayim did not seem to bother Yehoshua that much, that he could not come to Yerushalayim.
Could it be that he's just... Yerushalayim is isolated from the other cities. They're not going to support each other, whereas the other cities were in a group, and he didn't want them to merge together.
That is a hard read from this map, because this map is simply a map of the names of the cities mentioned in this parak. If I come back to this map, for example, you can see Yerushalayim, here's Gilgal, Yericho, here's Yerushalayim, here's Bethlehem, here's Hebron, here's Givon. In many ways, Yerushalayim is much more central strategically than these cities in the south. Here's the cities in the south: Devir, Hebron, Lachish, Eglon. Right? These are all the cities that here that Yeshua is busy cleaning up down here, but he's abandoning Yerushalayim, which is right in the heartland between the triangle between Yericho, Hebron, and Ai.
What about the elevation?
They're all elevated.
Right, no, but all these other areas, like he was getting all the good land, right?
Yeah.
And trade routes and anything else that might be coming through.
Not a factor. Yerushalayim is much more strategically important. It's right in the heart of the country. You can talk about trade routes all you want, but you've got a Jebusite stronghold in, you're literally in your kishkas. because it's in the heart of the city of the tribe of Judah. Not.
Well, it's interesting that Adoni-Tzedek is the only king who was mentioned that he got together with the other kings and tried to come up with a strategy.
Against Yush, correct. Adoni-Tzedek was the one who started it. And yet, he leaves Yerushalayim and he doesn't come back to Yerushalayim. I'll come back to it. You're all correct, but it just begs the question, why? So let's leave this part of the story for a second, and let's look at another part of the story, which is Sefer Shoftim. What happens to Yerushalayim in Sefer Shoftim? So if I go to Sefer Shoftim, beginning of Sefer Shoftim, Perek Aleph, start down in Pasuk, this is the beginning, kind of a summary of after the death of Yeshua, the tribes themselves are going and conquering the territory. Yehuda goes first, and we get to Pasuk Chet. Vayilachamu bnei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim. The children of Judah fought against Yerushalayim. Vayilkedu ota. They conquered it. Vayaku lefichareh. They smote it by the sword. Vetirshachu be'esh. They set the city on fire. And then they head south. And then they head south. Okay. So they conquered Yerushalayim. Clearly it says they conquered Yerushalayim. And then they moved on. Did they settle in Yerushalayim? Did they take Yerushalayim? Did they say, Yom Yerushalayim, we've arrived, we're back here, the place of the Beis HaMikdash, the place of the Akedah, Har Moriah, celebrate Yerushalayim and all of its spiritual significance? Or did they find themselves in a position where they conquered a city called Yerushalayim and moved on? Take a look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph, same parak, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Ve'et ha'yivusi, Yoshev Yerushalayim. Lo harishu b'nei binyamin, v'yeshe v'yevusi et b'nei binyamin b'Yerushalayim ad hayom hazeh. The Jebusites in Yerushalayim, the children of Israel, the Binyamin, were not able to inhabit that land or conquer it. And so the Jebusites continued to live in the heart of Sheva Binyamin in Yerushalayim until today. Which is an exact replica of the pasuk I just showed you in Yehoshua, except that it's Yehuda and Binyamin instead of Yehuda. We'll talk about that another time. But this is clearly a problem. They get to Yerushalayim and conquer it here up at the top, and then in the same perek it says that the Jebusites just stayed there. So some suggest that the first reference is to kind of the region of Yerushalayim, and this is the city of Yerushalayim, but either way, they're in the heartland, they're right there. I come back to my thesis. If they knew the significance of Yerushalayim historically, I can't imagine for a moment that they would have left Yerushalayim be and not finished it off, gone into Yerushalayim, conquered it, taken it, settled in it, and claimed it as their capital.
Didn't they have the Torah already, or did they just not realize? Yes,
so I challenge you to find anywhere in the Torah where it says that Yerushalayim is the spiritual capital of the Jewish people. That's a subject we'll discuss. Yerushalayim is not mentioned by name. And that's the core of my thesis. Yerushalayim is referred to as a concept, never in the Torah mentioned by name. One of the big issues. In all of Sefer Dvarim, it's referred to over and over and over again as the place where God will choose to place his name there. Amakom asher yivchar Hashem Elokei Yisrael l'shachen shmo sham. Never mentioned by name. We shall explore that issue at length, Bezrat Hashem, in our next class. But, so we've gone from Sefer Yehoshua, beginning, right, conquest of Yerushalayim in the days of the Givonim. Then we get to the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. Let's take a look at the end of Sefer Shoftim. Perek Yud Tet. Now, Perek Yud Tet is part of a story that we have studied in various contexts. It's one of those stories you have to have a really good disposition in a kind of a not right after you've eaten kind of story. Pelegesh Begiva, it has a very difficult part of the story. However, I'm really interested in only one part of this, one detail. If you remember the story, there was a Levi, he had a Pelegesh, his Pelegesh came from Bethlehem, he mistreated her, she abandoned him, he ran after her. They have a whole conversation in Beit Lechem. Just to kind of put it in perspective, here, actually, let's look at this map. Here is Yerushalayim. This Levi comes from the city of Giv'ah. Well, he's actually from a little bit further north, but he's in, come to Giv'ah, north of Yerushalayim. Beit Lechem is south of Yerushalayim. She ran to Beit Lechem. He runs after her. They on their way home, and we come to Pasuk Yud. Let's start on Pasuk Tet. Vayakom ha'ish lalechet. The man and his pilegesh got up to leave Beit Lechem. Hu ufilaksho v'na'aro. To come together with his pilegesh and his na'ar. The father-in-law wants him to stay another night. He refuses. Next morning, he gets up, and they start the journey. The man doesn't want to tarry that night. So he gets up sometime in the afternoon. And he comes to the city of Yavuz in Yerushalayim. Because they got delayed and they left in the middle of the afternoon instead of first thing in the morning, they ended up from Beit Lechem coming to Yerushalayim sometime around sunset. And together he had a pair of donkeys together with his concubine, Ufilaksho. Heim im Yavuz. They come to this city of Yavuz. V'hayom radim od. And the day is spent, meaning the sun is about to set. So the na'ar turns to his master and he says to him, why don't we take a detour and just go spend overnight in this Jebusite city of Yerushalayim? At least we'll have a place to sleep. So the master says to him, lo nasur el ir nochri asher lo mibnei Yisrael hena. We are not going to sojourn in this foreign city inhabited by non-Israelites, city of Yavuz. Rather, we're going to travel a little bit further north. We'll come to a Jewish city in the tribe of Benjamin called Giv'ah. I'm not going to read the rest of the story. The rest is history. They were given hospitality in the city of Giv'ah, worthy of the people of Sdom. And from that emerged the tragedy of what we call Pelegish Begivah, a civil war that almost wiped out the tribe of Benjamin. Sometimes I almost think that if he had spent the night in Yavuz, it would have been a lot better for them all. But how is the city of Yavuz described? The city of Yavuz is described as an Ir Nochri. We're talking about the end of Sefer Shoftim. The end of Sefer Shoftim, and there's still Yerushalayim, Yavuz, is still a Jebusite foreign city.
I have a question still about Shoftim Aleph, because there were two other psukim, which you kind of skipped about Jerusalem, which about the king that had its hands and his toes cut off, or his thumbs.
That's not Yerushalayim, that's Adoni Bezek. That's a different king and a different city.
But then they pursued him. Look, it says that they brought him to Jerusalem and he died there.
Yes, but that's part of that conquest of Yerushalayim that they moved on from. But he's not the same king of Yerushalayim. He's not Adoni Tzedek, but Adoni Bezek.
They left him with the Jebusites?
They left him with somebody. It doesn't clear. Remember, they had conquered Yerushalayim. In the early psukim of Perek Aleph, they conquered Yerushalayim. Then they moved on. So it's unclear.
And then clearly, at the end of it says something about they couldn't take the hill country because of the iron, or they couldn't take the plains because of the iron chariots. Is that where they're not talking about Jerusalem there?
No.
But there's another place they couldn't take.
Right. There's lots of places they didn't take. So I come back to my question. And I'm going to close Sefer Shoftim for a second. Come back to my question, which is on what, right, if the assumption is that Yerushalayim has all of this historical significance from day one, how is it possible, or why is it, that through 400 years of biblical history in the land of Israel, Yoshua, Shoftim, and Shmuel, Shaul, David, not one of them considers Yerushalayim for its historical religious significance. Even David doesn't choose Yerushalayim for its historical religious significance. David has no idea of the historical religious significance of Yerushalayim. His choice of Yerushalayim is based on totally other factors, but we know for a fact that he does not choose Yerushalayim for its religious significance.
Maybe it was not really Yerushalayim where all those things happened.
It's absolutely Yerushalayim. We'll come back.
Like
I'm not looking for, we're not going to come up with answers today because the answers are far more complicated than simple. Debbie, I'm not trying to close down the conversation. I hear what you're saying. It's just that there's not a simple answer to this question, right? They know Yerushalayim is Yerushalayim. We know if its place is in the Chumash. We're going to find a more, we're going to resolve this question, but I first need to understand this question before we can resolve it. I want to show you two more references briefly. One is, you're all familiar with the story of how David eventually chooses the city, the hilltop for the Beit HaMikdash. You ever linked that story with the Malach and the plague at the end of Sefer Shmuel? This is a story. It's like we're in Parakei. This is in Parak Aleph. Not Parak of Aleph. Parak of Dalet. There was a plague for 3 years, and it devastated for a period of time. After 3 years, 3 days, it devastated the land. Tens of thousands died. And then there is a vision that David has, and he sees a malach standing over Yerushalayim with his sword pointed out, and he's standing over a threshing floor or a hill that belongs to an individual by the name of Aravna Yebusi. And he buys it from Aravna Yebusi, and he purchases it from him at that time. It's clear at the end of Sefer Shmuel that David does not yet know that the significance of Yerushalayim is that it is destined to be the place of the Beit HaMikdash. Right. He buys this piece of land from Aravna HaYevusi, the Jebusite, the king of Yevus, even though it's a hill next to Ir David, right? It's just outside of Ir David, there's a little hill. Ir David doesn't even include the mountain of Har Moriah. He's like so close, but he's the next hill over. It's like he missed the zip code. And he ends up buying this extra hill from Aravna Yebusi, and he builds a mizbeach there because of the story of the Magepa. He it's not even clear that he knows that there's a connection between this city and all of the stories of Sefer Bereishit. It's an extraordinary mystery. There's also a parak in Tehillim, I think it's Kuf Lamed Bet, that describes David's quest his whole life. Look at this. This is a parak in Tehillim, Kuf Lamed Bet, one of the Shirei Ma'alot. Shirei Ma'alot Zochor Hashem LeDavid Et Kol Unoto. God should remember all of David's afflictions. Specifically, Hashem Nishba LaHashem took an oath to God. Nadar LaVir Yaakov took an oath to the Mighty One of Israel. Im Avo Ba'ol Beiti Im Ele Al Eres Yitzu'ai. The oath was, I shall not come into my tent to sleep. I shall not sleep on my bed. If I give sleep to my eyes nor slumber to my eyelids, ad emtza makom la'Hashem mishkenot la'avir Yaakov, until I find that place destined to be the dwelling place for the Mighty One of Yaakov. David spent his whole life searching for the place of the Beit HaMikdash. So clearly, he did not know. Now, it's possible that they knew of all the stories of Sefer Bereishit. But clearly, he did not know that this city of Yevus, this mountain threshold of Aravna Yevusi, the city of Ir David that he had conquered, was in fact the Yerushalayim of Sefer Bereishit. If he knew that connection, if he knew that Yerushalayim was in fact that place, then why are they conquering it three times and moving on? Why are they abandoning it? Why do they get to Ir David and abandon Har Moriah? The rationale behind all of David's actions and all of his predecessors' actions becomes significantly becomes much more problematic if David knew of that connection between Yerushalayim and the city of and the city of Yebus. So how do the Mefarshim deal with this? So briefly, I'm going to come back to our parak for a second. Okay. How do the Mefarshim deal with the question of why it took them 400 years to conquer Yerushalayim? So I'll show you two possibilities. Let's just take a quick glance at the Mefarshim. I'll show you two possibilities. Why does he wait till now to come to Yerushalayim? See, look at the Radak. Radak says, Nefi, this section here of the Radak, Nefi Shaita Kabbalah Etzlam, there had been some kind of tradition amongst the leaders of Israel, Kitzion Rosh Mamlechet Yisrael, that Zion was destined to become the capital of the kingdom of Israel. V'lo yilkodota elemi sheyeh melech al kol Yisrael. And it would not be conquered by anybody who could not claim to be the king over the entirety of the Jewish people. And therefore, ad hayom lo nitkayma malchut Yisrael, ki sheol lo kama malchuto. And a clear kingdom, kingship over all of Israel had not been established until this point, because Shaul was king, but his kingdom, his reign, his dynasty didn't survive. And David was the first to be a head of a dynasty that would be established over all of Israel. And so David was the first to be worthy to conquer Yerushalayim. So says the Radak. Again, an attempt to address the question that we are asking, how come it took them 400 years to conquer, to settle in Yerushalayim? After all the numbers of times that they come close to conquering it, they seem to abandon it. They don't seem to think it is significant enough.
Seems like a fair answer.
It's a possibility. Again, in the difference between Medrash and Pshat, is that the Medrash will add information to the text that's not in the text. And we have no reference to such a Masoret, number one. Number two, Yeshua was no less a king of Israel than was David. Yeshua conquers Yerushalayim. Why wouldn't he have taken Yerushalayim and settled therein? And number two, it sort of sounds like one of those answers which is an after the fact. Because David doesn't come to Yerushalayim for religious reasons. It's clear. He doesn't come to Yerushalayim and immediately establish the place of the Beit HaMikdash, because after all, now Yerushalayim can come, and we can settle it, we can build the Beit HaMikdash, etc. Comes to Yerushalayim, and for 33 years, he's going to live in Yerushalayim and without knowing where the place of the Beit HaMikdash is going to be. Even more complicated is the answer given by Rashi and many of the other Mefarshim, which is that there was, according to a kind of a medrash, that there was a masoret, there was a tradition from the days of Avraham and Avimelech. Avraham, when he made that brit with Avimelech and Beersheva, so there's a medrash that says that he promised Avimelech that he would never conquer Yerushalayim. And so they needed to honor that promise that Avraham had made to Avimelech, that they would never conquer Yerushalayim. And that promise had been inscribed on two idols. One was an idol or a statue of a blind man, and the other was a statue of a lame person, Echad Iver v'Echad Piseach. And they represent Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov. Yitzchak, who was blind, Yaakov, who was lame. Limp. And on those two idols was inscribed this oath that Avraham had taken to Avimelech. And so the Jebusites stood on them on the walls, and they pointed to these idols, and they say to David, you can't come here because your ancestor Abraham had promised he would never conquer Yerushalayim. Now, that's the answer given in Rashi, in the Rabag, in virtually all the other Mefarshim, struggling with exactly the same question. In the shot of it, it's an enormous mystery. Why doesn't anybody take Yerushalayim? So the Medrash, again, in a classic approach, will have to, we call Miluy HaPar, has to fill in the blank and fill in a piece of a story that's not in the text. And we have no reference anywhere to this brit that Abraham made with Avimelech, nor do we know about Yerushalayim, nor is there any logic to it. So I come back to this question, which we've asked again and again. We're going to, today was a day to ask the question, not to answer it, which is, what happened to the clear Masoret from the days of Avraham as to the location of the place of the Akedah that would ultimately, I'm going to stop sharing, that would ultimately define Yerushalayim for us? What happened to that Masoret, that ladder of Yaakov that is supposed to be pointing to Yerushalayim? What happened to the foundation stone, the Chazal point to in the story of Gan Eden in Yerushalayim? Where is the Breshit, Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem? Where is the Yerushalayim of Sefer Breshit that disappears? To the point where in Sefer Devarim, when the Torah wants to refer to Yerushalayim as the place of the Beit HaMikdash, it describes it as the place that God will choose to cause his name to dwell there. And nowhere in Chumash will the Torah mention Yerushalayim by name. So they come to Yerushalayim several times in Yeshua and Shoftim, conquer it, move on. David comes to Yerushalayim by accident. He doesn't even know that that's Yerushalayim of Sefer Bereshit. He doesn't even know that that's Yerushalayim of fame. He just comes to Yerushalayim for other reasons, which we will explore. So this is the question. And it's the beginning of a discussion, of a lengthier discussion, as to who and what Yerushalayim is, embrace it, why that Masoret of where Yerushalayim is and what Yerushalayim is disappears, and when it disappears, eventually leading to 400 years of a search for that place. David chooses Yerushalayim for political reasons we will explore. And eventually, the combination of all of these factors leads us back to the Yerushalayim we know to be David's city, God's city, the Beit HaMikdash, etc. All of them will converge at the end. But we have to do this step by step. So step one is to understand let's call it the disappearance of Yerushalayim. Then we'll look at the background to Yerushalayim, why it disappears, and eventually how and why it comes back together. That's our journey forward. It's going to take us a few weeks to get there, but Bezrat Hashem, we will explore it over the next number of weeks. Next Wednesday, there is not going to be a shiur on Zoom. I apologize, but it is... coming up to Shavuot, so Shavuot I think is Friday Shabbos, I believe. So I think we're going to give next week a week off, and Bezrat Hashem we will reconvene in 2 weeks' time.
Yashcha.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure, to everybody. Thank you.
Thank
for
you,
us.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All over the country.
Thank you.